In this first lesson, we're going to look at the different types of online marketing. But first, I want to also define what is marketing. So I like to look at marketing as two different parts. The first part is reach. So the reach is how many people you reach with your message. So you get your message out to either about your product or your company. And that's probably the segment that the aspect of marketing that I think most people think of is just they want to spread the word about their product or company. But the second part, which is just as critical, if not more critical, is the trust building. So you can't, selling to strangers is really difficult. So it's critical that not only do you identify potential customers through your marketing reach, but that you also use your marketing activities to build trust with these people. And this is typically building trust is going to require that they become part of your audience so that you can form a long-term relationship with them. So there are various ways to categorize online marketing. So one type that you'll hear is inbound versus outbound marketing. So inbound is essentially having people come to you instead of you going to them. So the classic case of outbound marketing is a commercial or a TV commercial or a banner ad or something in your Facebook feed. Those typically are outbound marketing because you're putting your message out in front of the customer. You're almost forcing them to consume your message. Versus inbound marketing is more about having the customers come to you on their terms. And inbound marketing is so much more powerful. It's really the new wave of marketing compared to the old style of outbound marketing. So inbound marketing is typically going to be you producing valuable content that then draws those people in to your brand to consume this content. And we'll obviously get into that in more depth. You'll also hear about organic versus paid marketing. So paid marketing is pretty clear what that is. That's typically what you think of for Facebook ads or Google AdWords or Twitter you can advertise on or LinkedIn. So those are all paid marketing activities. Versus organic is essentially, once again, you creating content. Google finds that content, indexes it, and now you start getting traffic from Google. And that's traffic that you're not paying for. You're paying, nothing's ever free. So you're still paying for it with the time that it took you to produce the content that is driving that traffic, but it's not paid on a per user, per click type of scenario like with paid marketing. And in almost all cases, I recommend that you start off with organic marketing and eventually later you can begin to boost that with some paid marketing. But if you start off in the beginning with paid marketing without really knowing your messaging and having everything fine-tuned, you're going to spend a lot of money to figure out the right way to do things. So I find it much better to do that through organic traffic, creating content, getting traffic from Google. And that's a slow process, as we'll discuss more, but it's a much better way to start with that first. And then once you get everything going smoothly, then you can boost everything with some paid marketing. And once again, the paid marketing is not going to be outbound marketing. You're still, in most of these cases, for whether you're running a Facebook ad or a Google ad or a Twitter ad, you don't want to drive people to your product itself. You don't want this to be a sales, you know, buy my product for this price. Instead, you want to use paid marketing to drive traffic to your content. So it's still inbound marketing, but it's being boosted by paid traffic. So instead of having your Facebook ad go directly to your sales page, you would instead have it go to some useful content. And then once they go to that content, then they become hopefully part of your audience, which is obviously going to be a portion of this course of how to get them in your audience. And then once they're in your audience, then you can build a relationship with them And then once that relationship is developed, then that can turn into a sales opportunity. But it should never start with sales. Instead, it's always best to think of your customer, to always be serving them and providing what they need and what's most helpful for them. So in this case, that would be creating content that provides them information that they're seeking. And like I've kind of mentioned, no longer outbound marketing, no longer are in-your-face ads really successful online. That's still the way it is through television. I'm hopeful that ends. It's like I'm always surprised in how outdated television commercials seem, that they just spontaneously come on and I'm being forced to listen to some branding message that I don't really want to listen to. And that was the way things started off with the internet, with banner ads and such. But over time, people just became immune to them and just would ignore any banners and would just close them without reading them. So yeah, that style no longer really works on online marketing. Instead, it's all about just providing lots of value for people and then having them come to you instead of you going to them trying to sell your product. Okay, so that's just an introduction to online marketing, what marketing really is. Again, just to emphasize, it's both reaching people and it's also building trust with those people. That trust element is so key and is often overlooked in business, that everything in business, whether you're a partnership with another business or trying to sell your product to one consumer, it all is built upon trust. So always be focusing on ways to build trust with our audience. And the best way to build trust with people is to provide them what they need and not what you're trying to get out of them. So just always focus on the inbound marketing instead of outbound marketing. So focus on putting out content that people want and then use that content to drive them back to your website so they can hear your brand and your message, but yet it's done on their terms instead of on your terms. So everything in business, if you always focus on putting the customer first, then that's usually going to lead you. Although it's possible to do online marketing without audience building, If you go that route, what you miss out is the building trust aspect of marketing. So if you just do online marketing and even produce content and drive Google traffic and even do paid advertising, that will get your brand out there. But to build trust, you needed repeated, continuous interactions with people. And the best way to do that is by building an audience. And once you've built this audience and you have a way to reach out to these people, then you just keep providing useful, helpful content on a regular, consistent basis. And this is exactly what I've done with Predictable Designs. Everything I'm teaching here is exactly all the same steps I've taken with Predictable Designs. And this process of online marketing and audience building, it works regardless of the type of business you have, whether you have a service business like Predictable Designs or you have a hardware startup. It's the exact same process of getting your message out there, building an audience, building relationships with that audience, and then building trust with that audience, which then allows you to sell your product to people that already trust you and have a relationship. It's a much better way to go about selling a product instead of just shoving your product in the face of everyone. That just does not work anymore, as we discussed in lesson one. So building an audience is how you're going to build trust and how you're going to build relationships with these people. So it's absolutely critical to the equation of success with marketing. Is you have to do the online marketing and the audience building. And that's why both of those topics are being covered in this course. So there are three fundamental ways to build an audience. You can either build your own audience. So that means producing lots of content, getting Google to index that content, driving traffic back to you, And then you get those people added on to your into your audience, which we'll discuss that in just a second. So you can build your audience. That's typically the best way to start. It's also the slowest and takes the most work, but it's also the one that will just, there's a lot of work and upfront time it takes, but once it starts delivering results back to you, that just keeps snowballing and building and building and building. And work that you've done years ago will still be producing marketing benefits for you that will be driving customers in. So I always, you definitely want to start with building your market or building your audience, your own audience. The second option is borrowing an audience. So this is finding someone that already has an audience that is an influencer online that has an audience that is an audience that's the same demographic and the same target market as what you're looking to build. Then you can partner with these people and use their audience. So perhaps, you know, they sell your product or talk about your product or recommend your product in exchange for a commission. So that's borrowing an audience. That tends to be really difficult when you're first starting out because no one wants to promote your product to their audience if it's a product that's unproven, if you're unproven, if they don't know you. So that's more an option that will be feasible once you start to build your own audience and build your online reputation and build some success with your product so that other influencers will be more comfortable promoting your product to their audience. And then the final way is you can buy an audience. And that's basically through Facebook ads, Google AdWords. Those tend to be the two big ones, with Facebook being by far, I think, the dominant player in online advertising right now. But there are other options, Twitter and LinkedIn. LinkedIn can be a really good choice if your product is a business-to-business product. But for business to consumer, probably Facebook is going to be your best bet. So those are the three options. You can either build, borrow, or buy. So I recommend that you start by building, and then as you get things going smoothly and you get everything fine-tuned, then you can add the borrow and the buy options into your mix later to just boost everything up from the audience that you've already manually built. So when building an audience, what exactly is an audience? Is it Twitter followers, Facebook fans? It's neither of those. Those can be part of your audience as your social media audience, but it's way overhyped. There is 10 times more value in having someone's email address. Because an email address allows you to communicate one-to-one with that person. It's the same way that they're communicating with their friends and family directly. Obviously, they're communicating through social media as well, but privately, they're communicating through email. So you're sitting there your email is sitting there right next to an email from, I don't know, their grandma, someone that they already trust. So it's an email is by far the way to build an audience. Is so you want to get email addresses and build an email list. And you will hear this is very well known in online marketing, that email is where all the value is at. In fact, you'll hear a saying that the money is in the list, and that's referring to the email list. Every online marketer will tell you that they get so much larger return on investment for anything that they do through email versus what they do on social media. So I encourage you to not ignore social media, but to deprioritize it to a very low level and to prioritize getting email addresses. That's where the real relationship building and trust building happens, is through email. And that's going to be that way for well into the foreseeable future. There's no one realistically thinks email is going to disappear anytime soon. There was talk of it years ago when social media started taking off, but that just never happened. And email still serves a, a very special, unique purpose that can't be replaced by social media. So focus on collecting email addresses and not on getting followers to your Twitter feed or your Facebook page. Those can be important. I still recommend that you do those, but do those to sort of boost your content marketing and use those to get people onto your email list. So you send out, if you have a new blog post, you send that out to your Twitter feed. And you want to drive those people back to your website. And from there, you collect their email address. So the goal with all of social media is rarely to sell through social media. Instead, it's to use social media and to drive those people to get on your email list. So focus 90% of your effort on building an email audience and not a social media following. And social media tends to be a huge distraction anyways. So if you're using that for all of your marketing activities, it can be a bit of a trap. You go on there to share some information about new content, and next thing you know, you're pulled in reading, you know, watching cute cat videos or something like that. As I've already mentioned in the first two lessons, content is the way that you're going to build your audience and build trust with that audience. So if you have a website and you have no content, if you just put up a website that has information about your product, then you're not going to get any traffic at all, unless it's paid traffic that you pay for and then force them to go to your page and just read about your product. Instead, you have to have content on the page or on your website in order to drive traffic. So you need to provide helpful content on a consistent basis. I can't stress enough how important the consistency is. Not only does Google like the consistency, it sort of allows Google to trust you and your content more. If Google sees that you're doing this week after week, year after year, you're producing content, then that just makes Google trust you more. But it also builds that same level of trust with your audience, that consistency of showing up for them every week, always being there, providing valuable content and information for them is going to just build up a sense of trust and relationship with those people in your audience. So consistency is really critical. It's much better to publish an article on a weekly basis than trying to, you know, you have a burst of activity or your creativity where you publish 10 blog posts in 1 month and then you go 3 or 4 months without posting anything. That's not the way to go. And instead, it'd be much better to put those in a queue and release those once per week. And then that allows, first of all, if you release everything at one time, that's just too much content for most people to absorb. So it's much better to just have that released on a weekly basis and allows them to absorb that material and to just get to know you and to see you in their inbox each and every week. So I can't stress that enough. And there are different types of content marketing. Obviously, content, there are lots of different types of content, but the three that I'm going to discuss, the three main ones are going to be text is the most common, so blogs. And that's where up until recently, most of my emphasis has been is on creating blog content. And the big advantage with blog content is it has the highest reach. And that means it can reach the most people because it's what Google works the best with. Google's not as good at finding videos or indexing audio files and such as they are with text. So text is all about reaching the most people. That's typically, unless you're a YouTube celebrity, creating written content is going to be what allows you to reach the most people and to get your message out there to the most people. Infographics is another one that's similar in regards to the reach of text. It's not one I've ever done, but an infographic is where you create a graphic image that shows a process. You know, for instance, I could create an infographic on the 15 steps to develop your hardware product. So instead of a blog post about that, it's an infographic that shows you all the steps. And these can be really good because they tend to get shared a lot. People want to Other people will include the link to your infographic in their blog article, so that they're a really good way to also reach a lot of people. It's not something I've pursued yet. It's the only type of content that we're going to talk about that I've not yet made a priority. So I would recommend starting with text. It tends to be, first of all, it's going to be what gets you the most reach. And when you're first starting off, you don't have any audience. So you really need to focus on the reach aspect and getting people to come into your audience. And I find text to be the best way to do that. I find it also to be one of the easiest to create, especially when you're first getting started. Trying to create videos on a weekly basis is pretty intimidating. I find video to be the most complex to do on a regular basis. So just keep that in mind and to start simple and don't try to do everything at once. Start simple and then just build up from there. So second are audio, like podcasts being the prime example. And as you probably know, I have a podcast now. So I definitely understand the benefits of audio. And then the same goes with video. But and the big benefit of audio and video is that's what allows you to build a relationship and to build trust. It's people get to know you much more through your voice and how you speak about things and your sense of humor and your personality. And that's really difficult to get through text unless you're a really good writer. That's really challenging to do through text. So focus on using text to get people in and then add, once you have an audience of, you know, a decent size, then you can add audio and video components that allow you to form a closer relationship with those people in your audience and to build trust with them. So this can be a podcast like I've done. And I find podcasts to be actually in a lot of ways easier than text content or definitely video content. Especially with audio, if you have a format like I do where it's interviews, that can be a really efficient way of producing a lot of valuable content. I don't have to sit down for hours and write a blog post. Instead, I will typically just create an outline with a list of questions that I want to talk about. I hop on the call with the person I'm interviewing. We talk for about an hour and I record that call. And then with just a little editing, then fairly shortly thereafter, I have a podcast episode ready. So I find that to be an efficient way of producing content. And it takes me less time than it does to write a blog post. But a podcast doesn't have the reach that a blog article will have. So that's why I focused first on blog articles. And then I added a podcast only recently, only this year, if I started a podcast. And the same with video. Video can even build up higher trust because people can see you. Video has a couple negatives. One is it takes a lot of work to do right. If you're going to do long videos, you almost have to be entertaining, which I don't really consider myself entertaining. So that's one of the reasons I've not focused so much on video. The other huge advantage with audio that you have over text or infographics or even video is how much time you get to spend with that person. Think about when you read a blog post, you may be spending, 10 minutes reading it. Infographic, probably a few minutes. Video, you're lucky if you can get someone to watch a few minutes of your video. Anything over 10 minutes, you're probably losing most of your audience. So video and text and infographics all are contents with very short attention spans. Audio or podcast, on the other hand, people listen to those for an hour on average. So it just allows you to develop a much deeper relationship with someone when they put you in their ear and they're listening to you for an hour. And they do that on a weekly basis. I that's just so much more powerful for building a relationship than text or video. So I encourage you to not start that way. You don't want to overwhelm yourself. The most important thing is that consistency and building some initial audience. So start with blogging, do that on a really regular basis. Then once you have an audience, then you can look into adding a podcast or video. And when you combine these different content types together. First of all, Google likes to see different types of content. So they're going to reward you with sending you more traffic if they see that you're doing audio and video and infographics and text. So when you combine all these together, you get both the high reach and you get high trust. And those two things together equal lots of sales, typically, assuming that you have a good product, of course. So that's going to be the strategy with content marketing, is to both extend your reach and have people understand your brand and come into your brand, and then also to build trust with those, typically through consistent blog content, but also eventually. Now that we've looked at an overview of online marketing, of audience building, and of content marketing, now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty steps of getting everything set up for you to begin online marketing and building your audience. So the first step is you need a website. Everything is going to center around you having a website. And even if you're not going to go this route of online marketing and building an audience, you still need a website for your business to be taken serious. So you do this very, very early on. It would be much better if you're, even when you're emailing potential people about your product or emailing manufacturers or developers, it's much better if you have an email address with your own domain instead of using a Gmail account. It just shows that, demonstrates that you're a real business. So everything starts with having a website. And there are lots of ways to do websites, but by far the most common, and I think the best, is to use WordPress. So first of all, there are two versions of WordPress, and the difference is really critical. So if you go to wordpress.org, that's the version of WordPress that you'll want to use, because wordpress.org is, you basically are able to download WordPress and you install it on your own host. And then this allows you to have your own domain name. So for example, predictabledesigns.com. I use wordpress.org and I'm hosting it on my own server. Versus if you use wordpress.com, that is more where they will host it for you. And that's not going to be a good solution for a real business. That's fine if you're just kind of wanting to play around with doing some blogging and such just for personal use. But as a real business, you absolutely need to have everything on your own domain so that you own and control everything. So definitely start with use WordPress. It just will simplify everything for you. There's it's so widespread that you can find lots of developers that can help you with WordPress, lots of information and instructional videos and such on doing it yourself also if you wanted to go that route. So definitely start with WordPress. And WordPress is really intended to be a blogging platform. So it's also obviously going to be set up for posting blog content and such, but it's a full website platform for creating a full website. You can have sales pages and everything under there. There are a huge number of plugins that you can add, which are additional software that you can add onto WordPress that allows it to do everything. So definitely start with WordPress. Second is you need a theme. So a theme is essentially how your website's going to look, all the styling for your website. So do not start with custom development. If you use WordPress and you buy a theme, it will be more than good enough for what you're going to need getting started. This is still what I use on all my sites. I've not had any full custom website development done. Everything is WordPress and using themes, and then some small customizations as you go along, but not having a fully custom website. If you want to hire someone to develop a fully custom website, you're looking at thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to do that. And that's not the way you need to spend your money. So instead, use WordPress, buy a theme, and that will do 90% of the work for you instead of doing fully custom development. There are lots of online themes. I like thrivethemes.com. So I recommend that you check them out. They have a lot of good themes that are really nice looking and good pricing. So definitely check out thrivethemes.com. So once you have everything set up and you've got WordPress installed, you've got a host to host your website. And once hosting your website, these are some technical details I'm not going to get too into. There's plenty of information you can find online about getting all of this set up. So once you have WordPress going set up and you have the theme, now you need to start producing your actual website content. So you're going to start with a homepage. That's going to be your first thing that you need to create. Every website needs a homepage. So this is where you're going to, this will be the entry point for a lot of people that first learn about your website, at least until you get content up. Once you have content up, then you'll have a lot of people coming in through that content. So that will be slightly different than when you have people come to your homepage. Typically they've not found a specific piece of content. They may not even really know that much about your company. So it's a little bit different what you want to do on a homepage versus if someone comes to your blog article. But the key is to not focus on the product, focus on the customer. Obviously you can have information about the product, but it's one of the most common mistakes I see that people make with marketing or sales is they focus on the product itself instead of on the customer. So instead of focusing on the features of your product, focus on the benefits to the customer. So always try to frame everything from the perspective of the customer and how you can help the customer. So whether or not on your homepage you want to share details about your product at this stage, that's going to vary for different people and where you're at with your project and what type of IP protection you have in place. But I recommend that you get a provisional patent in place as soon as possible. Then that way you can safely share details about your product. But once again, don't make it all about the product. Make it about the customer. So make that the emphasis. And then after you've kind of focused on the customer and their needs and showing that you understand what they need, then you can tell them more about your product if you're at that stage where you're ready. But if you're not ready to share details about your product, you don't have to yet. For example, let's say your product is a pet product. There's no reason you can't just start creating content for pet owners, and without having a product necessarily that you're ready to mention, you can begin building that audience and building that trust of people that are pet owners. So you know that this is going to be the right group of people that you can begin marketing or selling to once you have something ready. But there's no need to wait until you have a product developed. In fact, do not wait. You need to do all of this. And let me just stress that. I've not said that yet in this course, but you need to do all this ideally simultaneously as you develop your product. Do not spend all this time, 1 year, 2 years, developing and perfecting your product and getting a prototype ready and getting it ready for manufacturing. And then you've got units and now you're ready to sell them. So then you begin thinking about creating a blog. No. Don't do that. Start now. Do it in parallel with product development, because both product development and audience building take years to do in a meaningful way and to finish. So why not do them both simultaneously? There's no reason that they can't be done. Like I said, even if you're not ready to share details about your product, then just share content and start building relationships with your audience. And then you can tell them more about your product once you have that ready. So in addition to your homepage, the standard pages you're also going to want is you're going to want contact page. Obviously, it's got your email and your physical address is always good. Just adds a little verification that you're real and not just some virtual company that doesn't really exist. So it's always good to have your address and obviously your email address and social media profiles and such, so people can find you and learn more about you. And then of course you also want to have an about page. So this is where you can tell everyone. Most people think of an about page as telling everyone about yourself, and that's really not the best use of an about page. You can have that in there, just don't make that the initial focus of the about page. Don't just immediately start rattling on about your history and your education, et cetera, et cetera. Once again, take this as an opportunity to start with the focus being on the customer. So maybe tell them about how you focus on helping them. Make that the key message at the beginning of the about page. And then you can, as later on in the about page, you can tell them more about your own personal details. And definitely always include bios and photos of yourself and all of your team members. Once again, it adds that personal touch, because people connect much more easily with a human than they do a business. So when you're first starting off, you definitely want to use your personal image to build these relationships. So always have photos of yourself and all the founders. And don't just have snapshots with you with sunglasses and a baseball hat. Go have a professional photographer take these pictures. I can't tell you how valuable that is. It's something I did myself years ago when I first started Predictable Designs, and it was money that was so well spent. I'm very camera shy in the past. I've gotten better, but I'm not real good at taking pictures and smiling on cue and all that. So going to a professional photographer who knew how to get pictures of me and lower my guard level and make me more relaxed and get some good quality pictures. I've used these pictures so many times over the years. They've just paid for themselves 10 times over, probably 100 times over or more. So I recommend that being something you do early on. And then finally, if you're not completely non-technical, then I would recommend that you hire a WordPress developer. So not someone to develop a custom website, but just someone to set up WordPress for you, to install the theme, to install any necessary plugins, and to even create these pages for you. They can still all be done through WordPress. So I would recommend that you go to like Upwork.com, which is a freelance website. You can find just about every specialty on there, but there are thousands of WordPress developers on there. So if you're completely non-technical and this is all intimidating for you, then hire a WordPress developer. Otherwise, if you're semi-technical, this is all pretty straightforward stuff that most anyone that's technical is going to be able to do on their own. So this is the first step, is to set up your website. And next, we're going in the next lesson 5, we're going to discuss setting up the actual blog. Once you have the website set up, the next step is to set up the blog itself. Fortunately, with WordPress, this is really simple, because WordPress is ultimately a blog website platform. So it's really simple. So as I already mentioned, for most people, it's going to be best to start with a blog and written content, because it has the highest reach and it's what Google will be able to index the easiest to start driving traffic so you can begin building your website or your audience. But the content that you're teaching, if it's highly visual, if it's something that is really much easier to explain in person or through video instead of in the written word, or if you're also entertaining on video, that can be a really good indicator that video would be a better choice for you. But in general, I recommend starting with blog content. Like I said, if you happen to be really entertaining, you're comfortable on camera, you're really dynamic, then start a YouTube channel and you can really build a huge audience through that type of content as well. It's not the route I followed, because I don't really consider myself entertaining. More I just provide information is the goal that I serve. And that's typically much better done through written word versus video. So, like I said, WordPress is really ultimately a blogging platform. So this is really a pretty easy step to set up once you've got the actual website and everything set up through WordPress. So let me just show you quickly what my WordPress account looks like. So this is the dashboard that you'll have access, or the administration panel for behind the scenes of your WordPress site. So you can see under post here, This is where you'll post your blog post. You also have pages. So like your homepage, your contact page, those are pages, and then blog content, podcast episodes, even video where typically be done under post. And you can see here, let me click on post. I've actually got, you know, I have quite a bit of content. So I've got podcast posts. I've got non-technical blog posts, technical blog posts, video posts. Those are the main four that I'm using right now. This is for republishing content, which I'll discuss in a later lesson as far as extending your reach is republishing your existing content on third-party websites. So let's just go under non-technical blogs, and you can see I've got, this is, each of these is one of the blog posts that I've published. I'll just click on one here to show you what it looks like. So this is written, this is using the HTML version. You can also go into visual mode, and so it keeps the formatting and such. Insert pictures. So I'm not going to go into details of how to use WordPress, but I just wanted to show you what it looks like behind the scenes as far as doing the blog post. So that's pretty much all there is to setting up the blog. It's already going to be done as part of setting up your website if you're using WordPress. So this is the easy part of setting up a blog. The difficult part is what we're going to start in the next lesson, which is creating the content, and more specifically creating what I call the pillar content. Now that you have a website set up and a blog set up, now it's time to begin creating the content for that blog. And the way that I recommend that you start is by creating 2 to 3 pieces meaning blog content. So 2 to 3 articles of exceptional content that has absolutely insane value for your potential customers. So contrast this compared to the other strategy you'll see is just kind of publishing short posts on a daily basis, say 500 words. Instead, it's much, much better to focus all of your energy on just a couple really great posts that are just better than anything else out there on this topic. That's going to be a much better strategy for driving people to your website. First of all, it just provides a lot of value for anyone that actually gets to your website. Secondly, because these are really huge in-depth articles, Google likes that. Google doesn't want to send people to fluffy 500 word articles that don't really have any depth to them. Instead, Google wants to send people to articles that are really thorough and in-depth on that topic. So that needs to be your focus for your initial content. So instead of focusing on initially just starting off and every week publishing a short article, spend all of your effort instead on just 2 to 3 pieces of exceptional content, get those on your website, and then you can sort of switch gears for a little while and begin focusing on trying to drive traffic and attention to those first few articles that you've got that I'm calling pillar articles because they sort of the foundation of your blog. So focus on driving people to those articles through your marketing efforts. And then you can use that to just begin building up your audience. So these articles, these pillar articles, and in general, most of your blog articles should be ideally at least 2,000 words in length. And this isn't a hard, fast rule, but in the past, in years ago, most blogs tended to be maybe 500 to 1500 words. But a couple years ago, Google ended up giving more traffic to more in-depth, longer posts. So now it's pretty well known that you're much better off focusing on creating fewer in-depth articles instead of lots of less in-depth kind of fluffy content. So try to hit a minimum word count of 2,000 words, but especially for these first pillar pieces, I would shoot 3,000 to 4,000 words, 5,000 words. These need to be just absolutely an insane value for people. Then later, once you're beyond just these, your first pillar pieces, then, and you're blogging on a weekly basis, then that's when I would probably maybe shoot more for 2,000 words or more. So when you're writing blogs, you want to include lots of images, lots of data. And another tip is it needs to be readable. So one of the big differences with a blog versus like a full white paper or article is use very small paragraphs. If someone comes to a blog and they see huge blocks of intimidating text, they're going to go on. You need to make it really readable. And that means you need a page with lots of white space and really short paragraphs. So I would keep your paragraphs 2 to 3 sentences at most. Some paragraphs may just be one sentence. If it's a sentence that you want to really showcase or highlight, then you may just do that sentence on its own. But definitely keep the paragraphs as short as reasonable, 2 to 3 sentences being ideal. And you're going to want to have lots of images with captions. Images, they serve multiple purposes. First of all, you can get traffic from the images through Google image searches. But also they break up the text once again to make it more readable. They just sort of break up the monotony of just a huge screen of text. So definitely use, at least you'll need a featured image that will be the main image for the article. So you need to have that at the very minimum. But I would recommend 2 to 3 images within the body of the article itself as well. And absolutely do not use Google image search to find images for your website, because most likely these are going to be images. And if you use them, these are copyrighted images and you're going to be violating someone's copyright. And you most likely no one will notice it for quite a while, but eventually this will come back to haunt you. I've had this happen myself. I kind of was sloppy on some of my early blogs and used Google image search images, even though I specified that they were copyright free images. That's not a valid way to find copyright images. And I had, you know, people, their, you know, law firms reach out to me saying you're using copyrighted images without their permission. So I had to go back through, it took weeks of effort to go back through all my old blog posts and replace all the images with images that I purchased. I like a website called depositphotos.com. They seem to have one of the best rates. I just pay a monthly fee that allows me to download a good number of images. I'm not sure the exact number. They have different plans, but definitely start with that. I know it's so tempting to use just images you find online, but it's just going to come back and haunt you. And it's pretty stressful when you get a letter from a law firm telling you that you need to pay them lots of thousands of dollars because you've been illegally using their images. So just avoid that from the very beginning by only using images that you purchase. The one exception is if you, through Google image search, if you find images that are licensed for Creative Commons, like Wikipedia images from Wikipedia, those are all images that you can use that are copyright free. So that's the only exception. Otherwise, make sure you always pay for all of your images. And the most important thing is to make the content just so good that people want to share it. And that's what you need. You need to get that snowball effect, that momentum building for your blog, is you need to produce such great content that people want to share it. They want to link to it in their own blogs. And that's the key to driving more traffic to your website, is more websites linking to your article or to your website. Because in Google's mind, every time someone links to your website, that's a vote of confidence for your website. So definitely focus on producing content that's just so good that everyone wants to share it and link to it. And everyone's going to want more content like that. So that's the way to start. 2 to 3 pieces of exceptional pillar content, and then you can switch to marketing that content, and then from that you can begin your consistent weekly blogging process of releasing new content each week. Now that you've set up your website, set up your blog, and you have your pillar content in place, The next step is you need to set up your opt-in forms in order to collect people's email addresses. Once again, email addresses are how you build an audience, and that's the information that you want to collect, not social media followers. You want to get email addresses. So you need to have your website set up that allows you to collect email addresses through what are called opt-in forms. So someone opting in to receive your content. So they're called opt-in forms. And so you'll collect the email addresses, and then those email addresses through the opt-in form go to your dedicated email service provider, such as MailChimp. MailChimp.com is who I use. It's who I recommend that you start with. You do not want to send these emails through your own private email account, because you'll be flagged for spam and everything else. You need to use a dedicated email server for this, because you're going to be sending out hundreds or thousands or eventually tens of thousands of emails. So obviously you don't want to be doing that just through your normal email account. Instead, use a service like MailChimp. So let me take a look at MailChimp here. And this is MailChimp.com. And the thing that I like about MailChimp is they have a free starting plan. So for free, you can start up until you build a list of 500 people, and then you start paying, and it just sort of steps up as you keep adding it once you get a bigger and bigger audience. So their monthly rate scales with how many people, how many email addresses that you have. So MailChimp is really good because it starts free, which is really nice for those that are just getting started. It becomes a little less ideal once you get really established with a bigger list. That's the case for me. It's a little somewhat limited in some of the things that it can do. For instance, page tracking. MailChimp can't figure out that someone on your email list has read a certain blog post or been to a certain page on your website. So that's kind of restrictive. And I've wanted to switch. The problem is once you've got everything set up in one of these email service providers, it becomes a little bit problematic for you to switch, because you can transfer your email addresses and the emails that you send out, but all of your past data that you've collected will be lost in that transfer. So just keep that in mind. But for most people, you're going to be several years before you're going to outgrow MailChimp. So, but I think it's more beneficial to start with it, because it's really easy to use. It's probably the most common popular choice for an email service provider, and it has the free tier to help you get started. So I would recommend that you start by going to MailChimp.com and creating an account. So once you've finished setting up MailChimp, then you're also going to need the opt-in forms. And you can do opt-in forms through MailChimp, but it's not the way that I've used it. Instead, I use a third-party service called Opt-in Monster. So their website's just optinmonster.com. And let's take a look at their website. And they don't have a free plan, but they have some plans that start at fairly low cost here. We're with pricing. So they have some that start at only $9 a month. So what Opt-in Monster is they specialize in really beautiful opt-in forms. So pop-up boxes that scroll in along the side, welcome screens, which cover the entire screen. So these are all just different ways you're going to use to collect email addresses. And I encourage you to not just use the default forms in MailChimp, instead to use a third-party service that gives you more flexibility over the types of opt-in forms. The styling makes them look more professional. So this is a service that is well worth the cost. And as far as the types of opt-in forms, I know everyone hates pop-up boxes, but they work, and you need to find a way to not make them intrusive, which means I recommend that you don't have them pop up within 5 seconds of someone landing on your page on your website for the first time. At least allow the people to read a little bit of content, maybe at least 30 seconds or a minute, and then have a message pop up. asking for their email address. And I know they can be intrusive, and a lot of us don't like pop-up boxes, but they're really critical for building an online audience. It's you can do it without pop-up boxes. You can just have opt-in forms in your content and such, but pop-up boxes and welcome screens and these things, these types of opt-in forms are going to be a really huge part of building your email audience. So I recommend that you get past that idea of them being intrusive and look at it as more of a way is that you're benefiting that person by getting them on your email list, because you just know you have so much value that you're going to give to them, whether or not they ever buy anything from you, that you're going to be able to help them. And it's to their benefit, whether they know it or not, it's to their benefit to get on your email list. So think of it that way, and definitely implement pop-up boxes is what I would recommend doing. So those are the two steps, the two pieces for building your email list. Is obviously you have to have the content and the traffic coming into that content, and that traffic, everyone wants to know how to get that traffic to their website. So the next several lessons after this one, I'm just focusing on different ways of building your website traffic. But beyond that, you need to have an email service provider like MailChimp, and you need to have an opt-in form service like Opt-in Monster, or you could use the default forms in MailChimp to get you started, but I would recommend using something like Opt-in Monster. And then the final piece is, so you've got these 2 to 3 pillar articles that you've got. Now you need to create lead magnets is what they're sometimes called, because collecting someone's email, they're considered a lead. So lead magnets is, it's not the nicest term, but it's the term that's used basically for a piece of content that most people can't view without giving their email address. So it's a magnet for collecting leads. And the best way to do this is to create a lead magnet specific for each article that you post. So especially for these first 2 to 3 pillar posts, you want to create a lead magnet that's just as insanely valuable as the article itself. So let's say you have an article on, for once again, or instead of pets, let's assume that's a fitness product. So you may have an article that's talking about fitness in general, then your lead magnet could be top 10 exercises to take your fitness level to the next level, or something like that, that's a PDF that they want to download. And it's much better to have this lead magnet correlate or be closely related to the article that they're reading. You don't want to have people come into your website to read an article on fitness, and then you're trying to get them to opt into some PDF on pet ownership, for instance. That's not the way to do it. The more targeted it is to that specific blog post, then the more likely people are going to want to sign up for your email list. If someone's interested in fitness and has come to your blog to read about fitness, then you know there's a high likelihood that they're going to be interested in a PDF of some sort that's really also related to fitness. So definitely create these high value lead magnets that are specifically targeted to your first 2 to 3 pillar posts. So each post of your pillar post ideally will have its own separate lead magnet. The easy one to do is just a PDF version of that particular blog article. That's the easiest article-specific lead magnet that you can do. And that's what I do for most of my blog articles. I have general lead magnets such as 15 steps to develop your new electronic hardware product, or a checklist of all the costs to develop your hardware product. But I also, for each blog article, I have where you can download a PDF of that specific article. And that's kind of the easy way to do it, is to just have a PDF version of that article. But if you can come up with something that's more unique, that's not quite the exact same as the article they're reading, but is along those same lines, then that's going to give you the best success you're going to have with the lead magnet, is if it's specific to that blog, but it's not just a PDF of that blog. It's something, it's an extra, it's an additional gift that you have for them that's related to that same topic. So just to reiterate, you need to, once you have the blog set up, you have your pillar content, then you need to set up an email service provider like MailChimp. You need to set up a opt-in form service like Opt-In Monster, and then you need to create lead magnets to collect email addresses on your initial pillar pieces of content. So in the next lessons, we're going to be focusing on bringing traffic to your website, which is online marketing. That's always the big question everyone's always trying to figure out, is how to bring traffic to your website. And it's challenging, but it's possible. It's going to take some time. And those are all the things we're going to discuss in detail in the next several lessons. Well, unless you have website traffic or people coming to your website, nothing that we've done up until now is going to really make any difference. It's no point in creating content if no one can find it. So for the next several lessons, I'm going to focus on different strategies for increasing the website traffic coming to your website. So the first that we're going to look at is Google. So search engine optimization, which SEO, and Google, these are going to be your primary way of drawing organic traffic to your website. And there are other search engines like Bing and DuckDuckGo and such, but they all pale in comparison to Google. So just focus all of your efforts on Google, and then the others will follow along with their, 1% of the search market share. It's just search is so dominated by Google. So that's what you need to start with, or focus your efforts on are with Google. Creating content and getting it indexed by Google and Google sending you traffic, it's a slow way to build an audience. But it's, first of all, it's free, other than the fact that it requires your time. So that's why it's will typically be the best strategy to start with, is building this content and having Google index your site and drive traffic for you to your website. So this is going to be a slow build, but it just keeps building and building and building and building and building over time. Each time you produce new content, then that just adds a little bit more website traffic to your website. You may only get say 100 people per month come to that one article, but once you have 500 articles on your website, then that's a lot of traffic. And these articles will not drive even traffic between them. You'll have plenty of articles that may get some initial traction if you send it out to your email list, but then once it's indexed by Google, you get very little traffic from it. Let's say dozens of visitors per month. But then you'll have other articles where Google will index and rank you number one, and you'll get potentially thousands people through that one article, or 10% or more of your total traffic can come from one article. So it's hard to pick those articles sometimes. There's a lot of upfront research you can do, keyword analysis, figure out what keywords people are searching for. Those are all good strategies to help you get more traffic from Google through SEO and traffic to your blog or your article content. So there's a million things that Google takes into account when deciding how to rank your website. But the most important and at the foundation of Google are backlinks. So a backlink is just anytime another website links to your website or your blog article. That's considered a backlink. And the way Google works, a backlink is like a vote for your content. Google has a hard time determining exactly what is considered good content and bad content. So it counts on other websites telling it that. And the best way to know if content is good content is if lots of people link to that content. So backlinks are really critical for telling Google that people like your content and enough to be linking to it. Now, when you're first getting started, you're going to probably need to go out and seek these backlinks. So you're going to need to go out and find websites that are already publishing content similar to the content that you're publishing, or at least along the same lines or the same audience. And you're going to need to have them linked. First of all, reach out to them, form a relationship with that that website owner, and then you're going to need to ask them if you can have a backlink or just share content that you've created, your pillar articles. You shouldn't really have to sell these. You can just share them with these other websites. Maybe initially don't even ask for a backlink. Just share that with them, and then after a week or so goes by, if you've not seen that they've linked to your website, then you can always go back and ask them if they found the article helpful. And if they did, would they mind linking to it? That can be a better strategy than just emailing them out of the blue and saying, hey, I want this backlink. It's always best, whether it's a customer, another business, you always want to start by trying to serve them and not yourself. So focus on just sharing your content and giving some value to this other website. Most bloggers are always looking for things that they can link to or refer their audience to. So just give that to them, and if then you can later follow up with them and ask for a backlink. But you're going to need to probably go out and find these backlinks initially. Later, once you have an audience built up, this just occurs naturally. Like, for instance, I don't really go out and search for backlinks anymore. I blog, I send it out to my audience, and then my audience sort of takes care of doing this for me. They like the content, they'll link to it on their own website or recommend it to other websites to link to. So that will happen naturally eventually. But in the beginning, you're going to have to sort of force it and push it until you start building up an audience and you're getting some traction online. Then that begins to happen a little bit more naturally, and it's not quite as forced. So the key to getting these backlinks is to also, you have to have quality content. No one wants to link to bad content. So that's rule number one. It has to be really good content, ideally better or different, or a different perspective than any other content on that topic. For instance, my blog at Predictable Designs may not be the best content from an engineering standpoint, for instance. There are lots of websites out there with lots of technical articles on building electronic circuits and stuff. But my unique angle is that I add the entrepreneurial business side to the equation. So that's sort of my differentiator. So make sure that you have something that differentiates your content and what you're saying so that people will want to link to it. And like I've mentioned before, it's best if these articles are 2,000 words or more, just because it becomes something that people want to link to more, because they know there's a lot of information, a lot of detail, the article's in depth, and it's worth sending their people to. So definitely always focus on high quality and consistency, because Google likes the consistency. That's going to just help Google trust you more, and also your audience trust you more, as well as that consistency. And that's critical for building trust. As I mentioned, it's also really critical for building trust with your current subscribers. The thing you can't do, and I'll talk about this later in the final lesson, but you can't just get these people on your email list and then never communicate with them until you have your product ready. That's just not going to work. By the time you reach out to them again a year later, 3 months later, 6 months later, they're not going to have any idea who you are, and you're just going to be flagged as being spam. So don't do that. Instead, always, once you get them on your list, you need to stay in consistent communication. But consistency is really critical for both Google and for your building trust with your own audience. So just to summarize, with SEO, it really is all about backlinks and producing high quality content. That's the key. It's a really slow process. It takes months before Google will even start sending you any significant traffic. They'll probably index your website within a few days, maybe a week. But to actually start developing some authority and trust with Google so they start sending you significant traffic takes several months to get started. And you may have to keep this up for a year, producing content every week before Google starts really sending you lots of consistent traffic. So the next method of getting traffic to your website that we're going to discuss is guest blogging. One of the issues with using Google to get your traffic, as I've already mentioned, is it just takes a long time for this to happen. You're talking at least a few months before you start getting any significant traffic from Google. And even more, it will even take you much longer to get like really, really significant traffic, maybe up to 6 months to a year of blogging to get consistent high amounts of traffic from Google. And this is even extra difficult in the beginning because there are no backlinks from other websites pointing to your website because no one knows about your website. So once you have your pillar content online, you need to start working on guest blogging and trying to get other websites to link. Ideally, you want other websites to link back to your website, but most websites aren't going to do that if you're unknown. So one way around that is to offer to write a guest blog for that website. And then you can include a link in that blog back to your blog. So there are other benefits to guest blogging. It's not just all about getting SEO. In fact, that should be one of the lower priority reasons for doing guest blogging. The other more important reasons are the initial traffic that you'll get just from the guest blog itself, people clicking on the link to go to your website, and then the fact that it helps you build your online reputation. So as you get more and more guest blogs out there, then it becomes easier to get even more guest blogs. So once you start to develop that online reputation, then that just can grow and open up more opportunities as you go forward. So one of the keys when guest blogging is to focus on the most relevant websites or blogs for your topic or industry and don't go too broad. For instance, early on, I was a guest blogger for Entrepreneur Magazine. However, the results were less than stellar as far as how much traffic I would get and things like that. There was probably some good SEO from it because Entrepreneur Magazine is highly ranked, but it didn't perform as well as I had hoped. However, then I went to other more niche websites that are more focused, like Make Magazine or Hackster.io. And I suspect many of you listening to this had found me initially through either Make Magazine or Hackster. And the results I got from those were many, many, many times better than what I got from Entrepreneur Magazine. So just keep that in mind. I know these big publications, Entrepreneur or Forbes or you know, whatever the publication is, the really broad ones that have huge audiences seem like a huge benefit for you. But I find the results are much better if you go with a smaller website that's more directly related to what you do. For instance, Entrepreneur Magazine includes all types of entrepreneurs, everyone opening a new franchise to a bakery to software, to hardware, to services. There's obviously entrepreneurship is a really broad topic, and hardware entrepreneurship is just a real small niche of that larger market. So for me, that Entrepreneur Magazine was not the best way to go. So how do you measure success when guest blogging? Well, you probably think, well, I need to measure it in how much traffic I get from it, or how many shares I get, or how many comments I get. And those are just not really the best way to measure your success. Remember, everything with email or online marketing is about getting email addresses. So a guest blog should be no different. So, in other words, measure the success of a guest blog based on how many email signups you get from that guest blog. That's really the best way to measure that. And, you know, once again, for my case with Entrepreneur Magazine, if I got 10 email subscribers from an article, that would be considered really good. There were plenty of articles I got where maybe 3 to 5 people would sign up for an email list, for my email list once they went back to my blog. Whereas with Make Magazine or Hackster, many blogs, I've gotten hundreds of email signups from a single blog. So that just gives you an idea of how much better it works if you focus on more of a niche website that matches closely with what you do. The other tip is to ideally get backlinks in the body of the article and not in the bio section. So any guest blog is going to allow you to have a bio at the end that obviously just tells a little bit about yourself. And that's typically where you're allowed to have a backlink to your website. So, but it's not the ideal case because Google is on to guest blogging, and Google kind of knows that if it sees a link in a bio, that doesn't carry as much weight as a link that's in the body of the text. And in fact, the sooner it is in the body of the text, the more important Google thinks that it is. So try to get a backlink in the body of the text and get it as early in the text as possible. The problem, though, is that most websites are not going to want to let you have a link in the main body of the text, at least not any of the big publications, and definitely not for your first article. They do this because they don't want people just writing guest blogs just solely to get that backlink, and you know they don't want people submitting really poor quality content just all trying to get that backlink. So, for instance, Entrepreneur Magazine or any of those are not likely going to let you even have a backlink in the body of the text. Now, what I found is that's true maybe the first few blogs, but eventually once they get to know you and they depend on your content and they trust you and they realize you're not just trying to get backlinks, then I found that they tend to be a little bit more open to allowing you to include a backlink in the body of the text instead of in the bio. But that's one advantage of working with smaller, more niche websites. Like once again, Make Magazine and Hackster are much more lenient in regards to what type of links that I include in the text. And also for SEO, the best type of link is something that links back to a blog article that relates to what you're talking about. But for getting email signups, I found that the best link, if you can get it, is a link that takes them directly to a landing page or an opt-in form on your website. However, that's the type of link that most likely most publications are going to frown on unless they're really small. For instance, Entrepreneur Magazine would never, ever allow that, regardless of how many blogs I wrote for them. Make Magazine allowed it a little bit, but then eventually they told me not to link anymore to email opt-in forms. But like a Hackster publication that's even more niche, they've been totally fine with me including links to email opt-in forms. So just keep that in mind when you're selecting the different publications that you want to guest blog for. So you don't want to start with an Entrepreneur Magazine. That wasn't by any means the first publication that I guest blogged for. It's much better if you start with smaller, less known websites and then just work up from there. And then you can leverage the previous posts that you've done. And then by the time you get to one of the bigger publications, you can say, hey, I've already had publications or articles published in all of these different publications. So start small and then work your way up. If you just try to go right in and try to get an article in Forbes or something like that, first of all, that's going to be a really broad market. And remember, go narrow instead of broad. So don't start with the big publications. Instead, always try to start small and work your way up as you're building your reputation as you go. And this will also allow you to get better at guest blogging, figure out what type of links work best for you before you start doing guest blogging for the bigger publications. And then a final strategy is to republish the content that's on your website already. So instead of writing a new article for every single guest blog, that takes a lot of effort. And that's the route that you should do in the beginning because you need unique content because Google's not going to value the backlinks in an article on another website if it's just a republished article from your own website. You can still get the online reputation benefits and traffic from it and email signups. But you're not going to get the SEO benefit from it that you would if it was unique, fresh content. But unique content takes a lot of time and effort to create. So it's a good strategy, especially once you have some a good amount of blogs on your own website, is to republish those on websites like medium.com or linkedin.com. For me, I also republish articles on hackster.io. So those are the three main platforms I use for republishing, is Medium, LinkedIn, and Hackster.io. So Medium and LinkedIn, those are public publications that you can use as well. And it just will get more eyes on your material, on your content, that wouldn't have ever found it before. So it's probably not going to be huge amounts of traffic that it's going to drive or signups, but it's really simple to do. It doesn't take a whole lot of time to republish an article. And in fact, Medium even has they have a tool, so you can just put in the URL of your original article, and it creates a duplicate copy of it in their system. And the other thing to remember is, as long as the article properly states that it's a republished article, and it, in that statement, it links back to the original article, Google's not going to penalize you for duplicate content. Everyone does republishing. So as long as Google's clear on who the original source is, that's really all that matters. So make sure you have the text at the bottom that says originally published here, and it links to that. So that's going to be one of your, best ways of making sure that Google doesn't think it's duplicate content. I also recommend that once you publish the post on your own website domain, that you wait about 2 weeks before you republish it. That gives it Google time to find it on your website before it sees it anywhere else. So Google will therefore know from that point on that the original article, the one that it needs to send the most traffic to, is going to be the one that's on your website. So guest blogging can be a really great way of getting some initial traffic, building your SEO profile, and building your online reputation. It's definitely one of the best ways to get started once you have your own blog up and you have that initial content. The next method of getting website traffic that we're going to discuss is using social media. So I've already mentioned that I recommend that you do not prioritize social media. Instead, prioritize getting email addresses. However, social media still has its benefits, and one of them is to use it to drive traffic to your website. So first of all, you've already got your pillar post. So what I would do now is focus on using social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, to drive traffic to those pillar posts. So with social media, it's rarely a good idea to send them directly to your email opt-in form, because these are strangers, most likely, that maybe, you know, have seen you on Twitter but don't really know or trust you yet. So just sending them to an instant form to ask for their email is probably not a good idea. Instead, you need to kind of win them over and prove that you know what you're talking about and allow them to build some trust for you. So instead of driving them to an opt-in page, drive them to your pillar post, your best content that you have. And then eventually, once you've got more content on your blog than just your pillar post, then you can publish, share these on your social media accounts each time you publish a new blog post. And in fact, there are services that allow you to automatically post onto social media accounts. Like, for instance, you could have it set up so every day a new tweet is posted with a link to one of your blogs, and this can be set up to just repeat over and over. If you only have three blogs, then having this set up so every, you know, those three blog posts are constantly shared over and over, it's probably not a good idea. But once you have enough content that you can cycle through them, and people aren't going to be constantly seeing the exact same content over and over, then that can be a good strategy. I use a service called Social Oomph. So that's just social and then OOMPF.com. And they have a tool that allows you to set up these automatic posts to Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. But also, as I've mentioned, social media tends to be a huge distraction. And if you're if you have a little bit of a social media addiction, then I would definitely not encourage you to focus on social media up front, because it is a distraction. You go on there to, you think you're just going to post a quick link to one of your blogs, and next thing you know, you're just looking at pictures from your friend's vacation or whatever. So it's definitely, it can be a big distraction. So don't let yourself get caught in that trap. It has benefit in driving some traffic to your blog, but that benefit tends to not be so great that if you feel like you're going to get distracted and lose hours in there every day, then I would probably suggest that you don't prioritize that, or potentially outsource, hire a virtual assistant to do the posting, so you're not in your social media accounts and getting addicted and distracted. And then finally, as I've also already mentioned, do not focus so much on the number of followers that you have. That's more of a vanity metric, how many social media followers you have. What really matters is how many people you have on your email list. Most online businesses, if you were to give me one variable that I can use to measure how much revenue or how successful the company is or the brand is, it wouldn't be how many social media followers they have or necessarily how much website traffic they get. It would be how many people they have on their email list and how engaged are those people on their email list. If you have an email list of 100,000 people, but only 5% are opening your emails, then that's not that impressive. So it's all about the number of engaged people that you have on your email list. So once again, don't get stuck in the vanity metric of how many email list subscribers you have. Instead, it's how many engaged email list subscribers do you have? And this is why it's a good idea, and it's something I do frequently, is I go through and I clean out my email list. If someone's on there, they haven't opened an email in 3 months, then I send them an email saying, hey, I've noticed you've not really been engaged with my content. I don't want to keep bothering you if you're not interested. So reply to this email if you want to stay on the list. Otherwise, I'm going to remove you from the list in a couple of days. So that's something I do maybe every 3 to 6 months. I'll go through and filter that out. It's a good reason to do, because you low open rates are a trigger for Google that people don't like your content. And as you probably know, most people tend to have Google email addresses. So Google has a lot of control over what ends up in your spam box versus your inbox. So having high open rates tells Google, hey, people like this email, they want to open it, versus if you're just sending out to your huge list, but you've only got 5% opening it, then Google is going to end up flagging your emails as spam. And then it's just your open rates are even going to go lower. So use social media as a tool to drive traffic, but don't make it a high priority, and definitely don't let yourself get distracted with it. The final method of getting website traffic that we're going to discuss is also most likely the last method that you should use, and that's paying for traffic. So paid traffic typically means running ads on Facebook, running ads on Google. Those two together are by far the big monsters in online advertising. So those are the two most commonly used are Facebook and Google. But you can also do advertising on Twitter, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is good if you're selling to other businesses. Definitely go with LinkedIn. Instagram is another option if it's something that's highly visual. So the issue with doing paid ads is a lot of it is similar to doing the social media advertising. Like I said, you do not want to send people, whether it's a paid advertisement or your social media links, you do not want to send people normally to an opt-in page or a land, especially not directly to a landing page that's selling your product. Instead, you need to make both social media marketing and your paid advertising extensions of your content marketing. So these are ways of just boosting your content so that more people see your actual content. So focus on driving people to your best content, your pillar content, and not necessarily on just trying to get them to purchase your product. That comes later. As I've mentioned many times in this course, you need to focus on building trust with people, and that starts by having them read your content. So send them to your content, not to your sales page. And then the reason I say that this should be the last method is that you look at is because even though paid traffic it's the fastest way to get traffic, if you have a lot of money to spare, then sure, go ahead. You can experiment with it and you can eventually get it right. But from my experience with online advertising, it takes a lot of trial and effort to find out what works. And that trial and effort takes money. And you can do it for small amounts. You can run Facebook ads for $5 or $10 a day. So you're only, spending hundreds a month and not huge amounts of money. But in general, I find it much better to start organically, use all the free methods of getting traffic, because all those help build your reputation and just produce more content, which then builds the trust factor that you can get with people. So focus on organic methods and get that working. And then you can always go back and add in paid traffic to boost your marketing. But definitely I would not start with paid marketing. It can be an expensive lesson learned. And it tends to be, once again, it's a shortcut. People are always looking for quick, easy ways. It tends to be seem a lot easier and probably a lot more fun than to go into Facebook and create ads and experiment with what converts best and does a blue button or red button work best. That's all can be a lot of fun and can be really appealing to entrepreneurs that can get pulled into that versus creating blog posts and content. That's just work. That takes a lot of work to do, but there's no easy path to success. It's going to require work. So don't focus so much on trying to find these shortcuts to success with your website or your product or your company. It's all about taking, in most cases, that slow path to success. So start with organic and you can add paid traffic later once you get everything figured out. The final topic that we're going to discuss is building trust. And trust is something I've already mentioned multiple times in this course, but I want to end by emphasizing this. Because one of the biggest mistakes that people tend to make when building an online audience or doing online marketing, and this includes myself in the early days, is you get so fixated on building your email list or your followers, but you really should be more focused on building the email list. But you get so focused on building that email list and getting new subscribers that you tend to forget about the people that are already on your list. As I've mentioned, having this huge email list is absolutely has no value whatsoever if those people aren't engaged with you. Otherwise, it's just basically a list of strangers. You need to engage with these people. You cannot add them to your email list and then ignore them for 3-6 months and then just hope that in 6 months you can start trying to sell them your product. That's just not the way it goes. You need to be constantly in communication. It's just you need to be consistent about that communication. You want to, on a weekly basis, is a really good goal to have, to be able to reach out to those people on your list on a weekly basis, bi-weekly at the absolute most. If you get to where you're only reaching out to them maybe once a month, that's just not really enough frequency to develop any type of relationship. So try to shoot for reaching out to them once a week. Now, what do you share? First of all, once you get into the habit of blogging each week, you'll have a new blog to share with them each week. So that can be, that's in most cases the best strategy. But I understand that that can take a little time to get in that rhythm of creating fresh new blog content each and every week. So other things you can send out are, you do have the option, I've mentioned, to not be focused on your product, but you can use your email list to share information and updates about your product. People will be interested in hearing how things are going with the development of the product, and ask for feedback. That's one of the hugest benefits to having an audience, is not selling to them. It's getting their feedback. You've got hundreds or potentially eventually thousands of people that can give you such valuable market feedback. So use that. Don't wait until you have a fully developed product before you ever get your audience involved. Instead, have them involved in the development process. It's almost like crowdsourcing your development to some extent. And because ultimately with a product to succeed, you have to understand and know what the market wants. And I don't care how much experience you have, that's really, really difficult to do for one person. Even a lead buyer at Walmart who decides thousands of products that Walmart's going to carry, they don't know for sure. They'll be the first to tell you they don't know for sure that a new product is going to succeed. That's why they always test it. So no one knows what will be a success except the market. So if you can build an audience, you're getting a segment of that market that you can use for getting feedback and for testing your product idea with. So that's one of the ways you can share updates with or you can stay in communication with your email list. Obviously, I'm not saying do this every week. People get burned out just hearing only about your product unless they signed up for only your product. For instance, you can have a page on your website where it's just about your product, and instead of people opting in to get, say, a PDF version of your article, they can opt in just to get updates on your product. So in that case, that would be like a wait list. And a wait list is a little bit different than your general email subscriber list. The wait list, they specifically specified that they're interested in your product and they requested more information about it. So with them, people on your wait list, you can be a little bit more product focused than those that just signed up through to your email list based on content. Other things you can share, it doesn't always have to be your content. If there's a great blog post by someone else that you've seen published, then share that with your audience. It's not necessarily going to drive traffic to your website, but it does give you a way of staying in communication with your audience. I typically don't send out emails with links to other content. I have occasionally, but what I have done is I've had for instance, I've worked with Mouser, the electronics distributor, on several ebooks that they've created. Beautiful ebooks that are just really, really beautiful pieces of content. And you know, I wasn't the creator of those; they created it. They interviewed me, but there's lots of other people that are included in this ebook. But that's something I send out to my audience. I'm just like, hey, here, I was involved in this ebook. Here, I'm just going to share it with you guys for free. So it doesn't always have to be new content that you've created. It can be other content that either ideally content that you've been involved in creating, like an ebook, or just other content that you find useful that you think your subscribers would also find useful. So just keep them involved. Just keep that line of communication going. Even if you have nothing to share with them that week, maybe just check in and say, you know, how's it going, and ask them what are they struggling with right now? That's always a good question to ask your audience, is just open-ended questions like, what's your biggest struggle right now? And you can narrow that down into this specific topic. If it's a cycling product, you could say, you know, what's your biggest issue that you're facing in cycling, or whatever the topic is. You can kind of narrow it down that way. But keep them involved, keep them updated, and be consistent. That's the key to building trust. And once you have that trust, then that's when you can you have a powerful resource at your disposal for not only just getting feedback from them, but also eventually selling to them. And an email list is also really powerful if you ever plan on doing any crowdfunding campaigns. You absolutely need an email list to get the momentum going on a new crowdfunding campaign. So that's it for this course on an introduction to online marketing and how to build an audience. And If you have any questions about anything I've covered in this course, then there's a section in the community area for asking specific questions about the course material, and I will be happy to answer them.